Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Manton, an exposition with notes upon the Epistle of James. We're on verse 5. It's a little bit longer, so we plan to split it up into two readings, about half the verse apiece. So we'll go ahead and start here. Verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. The apostle, having spoken of bearing afflictions with a mind above them, comes here to prevent an objection which might be framed in this way. This is a hard saying, to keep up the spirit not only in patience, but joy. When all things are against us, who can abide it? Duty is soon expressed, but how shall we get it practiced? The apostle grants it is hard, and it will require a great deal of spiritual skill and wisdom, which, if you want, he says, or lack, God will furnish you if you ask it of him. And upon this occasion, digresses into the rules and encouragements of prayer. In this verse, he encourages them by the nature and promise of God. But to the words, if any of you, this if does not argue doubt, but only infers a supposition. But why does the apostle speak with the supposition? Who does not lack wisdom? May we not ask in the prophet's question, who is wise, who is prudent? Hosea 14:9. I answer, number one, such expressions do more strongly aver and affirm, basically similar word there, affirm a thing, as in Malachi 1:6, if I be a father, where is my honor? If I be a master, where is my fear? Not as if God would make a doubt of these things, but such suppositions are the strongest affirmations, for they imply a presumption of a concession. You will all grant, I am a father and a master, etc. So here, if you lack wisdom, you will grant you all lack this skill. So Romans 13:9, if there be any other commandment, etc. The apostle knew there was another commandment, but he proceeded upon that grant. So 2 Thessalonians 1:6, if it be a righteous thing, etc. The apostle takes it for granted it is righteous to render tribulation to the troubler and proceeds upon that grant. And therefore, we render it affirmatively, seeing it is, etc. So in James 5:15, if he hath committed sins, well, who hasn't committed sins? It is, I say, a proceeding upon a presumption of something that's granted. Number two, all do not lack in a like manner. Some want or lack only further degrees and supplies. Therefore, if you lack, with the supposition, if you lack it wholly or fully, or only more measures. Next word is wisdom. It is to be restrained to the circumstances of the text, not taken generally. He intends wisdom or skill to bear afflictions. For in the original, the beginning of this verse does plainly catch hold of the heel of the former verse, and then lacking nothing, and presently, if any of you lack. Let him ask of it, that is, by serious and earnest prayer, of God, to whom our addresses must be immediate, or without any mediation, so straight to God, that giveth to all men. Some suppose it implies the natural beneficence and general bounty of God, as indeed that is an argument in prayer. God that gives to all men will not deny his saints, as the psalmist makes God's common bounty to the creatures to be the ground of hope and confidence to his people, or a ground. Psalm 145, verse 16. Thou satisfiest the desire of every living thing. And upon this, his trust grows. Verse 19, he will fulfill the desires of them that fear him. He that satisfies every living thing certainly will satisfy his own servants. There's a general bounty of God, which though liberally dispensed, yet is not specially, or specially dispensed. But this sense the context will not bear. By all men, then, may be understood of all kinds of persons. So he's not making a distinction between the saints and the non-saints, at least according to Mr. Manton here. But he's saying it refers to all kinds of men, all kinds of persons, Jew, Greek, or barbarian, high or low, rich or poor. God gives not with respect to outward excellency. He gives to all men. Or else, number three, and so most suitably to the context, to all askers, all that seek him with earnestness and trust. However, it is thus generally expressed that none might be discouraged, but apply himself to God with some hope, so that no one will be discouraged, and that it's expressed this way so that everyone who is inclined to will go to God for these things. And then liberally, the word in the original is a Greek word which properly signifies simply, but usually in matters of this nature, it is taken for bountifully. I note it the rather to explain many other places, as Matthew 6, verse 22, Christ would have the eye single, that is bounteous, not looking after the money to part with. So Romans 12, 8, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. We read, but in the margin, liberally or bountifully. So Acts 2, 46, they did eat their bread with all singleness of heart, that is, bounteously, liberally, as we translate the word in other places, as 2 Corinthians 8, verse 2, the riches of your singleness, we translate liberality. So 2 Corinthians 9, verse 11, the same word is used for bounty. And this word, simplicity, is often put for bounty to show, number one, that it must come from the free and single motion of our hearts, as they that give sparingly give with a hand half shut and a heart half willing, that is, not simply with a native and free motion. And number two, that we must not give deceitfully, as serving our own ends, or with another intent than our bounty seems to hold forth. So God gives simply, that is, as David expresses it in 2 Samuel 7, verse 21, according to his own heart. And upbraideth no man. Here he reproves another usual blemish of man's bounty, which is to upbraid others with what they have done for them, and that it eats out all the worth of a kindness. The laws of courtesy requiring that the receiver should remember and the giver forget. But God upbraids not. But you will say, what is the meaning then of those expostulations concerning mercies received? And why is it said in Matthew 9, verse 20, then he began to upbraid the cities in which many of his mighty works were done? Because of this objection, some expound this clause one way, some another. Some suppose it implies he does not give proudly, as men used to do, upbraiding those that receive with their words or looks. So God upbraids not, that is, does not disdainfully reject the asker, or twit him with his unworthiness, or does not refuse because of present failings or former infirmities. But I think it rather notes God's indefatigableness to do good, or untiredness to do good. Ask as oft as you will, he upbraids you not with the frequency of your accesses to him. He does not twit us with asking, though he twits us with the abuse of what we have received upon asking. He does not upbraid not to begrudge his own bounty, but to bring us to a sense of our shame and to make us own our ingratitude. And it shall be given him. Besides the nature of God, here he urges a promise, let him ask of God and it shall be given him. The descriptions of God help us to form right thoughts of him, and the promise to fasten upon him by a sure trust. The notes are these. Observation 1, that all men are concluded and shut up under an estate of lacking, if any of you. This supposition, as we showed before, is a universal affirmative. God's wisdom suffers the creatures to lack because dependence begets observance. If we were not forced to hang upon heaven and live upon the continued supplies of God, we would not care for him. We see this, the less sensible men are of the condition of mankind, the less religious. Promises usually invite those that are in want or lacking because they are most likely to regard them. The promises are. Isaiah 55 verse 1, Ho, everyone that thirsteth, and he that hath money. Matthew 11, 28, the weary and the heavy laden. In the fifth of Matthew, the poor in spirit, and they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, being humbled by their own wants and needs, or lacks and needs, they are most pliable to God's offers. Well then, do not think your lot is above the lot of the rest of the creatures. God only is self-happy, self-sufficient. Other things are encompassed with wants that they may look after him. Psalm 145, 15 and 16, the eyes of all things are upon thee, and thou satisfiest the desire of every living thing. The creatures are made up of desires, that their eyes may be upon God. Certainly they want most, or they lack most, that lack nothing. Be sensible of your condition. Observation 2. From that lack, want, and indigence put us upon prayer, and our addresses to heaven begin at the sense of our own needs. The father should not have heard from the prodigal, or he wouldn't have heard from him, had he not begun to be in want. Luke 15, 16. Observe it. The creature first begins with God out of self-love. The first motive and allurement is the supply of our wants, or lacks. But remember, it is better to begin in the flesh and end in the spirit than to begin in the spirit and end in the flesh. It is well that God sanctifies our self-love to so blessed a purpose. If there had not been so many miseries of blindness, lameness, possessions, palsies in the days of Christ's flesh, there would not have been such great resort to him. The first motive is want. Observation 3, from that, wisdom. Considered with respect to the context, and the note is that there is need of great wisdom for the right managing of afflictions. Cheerful patience is a holy art and skill which a man learns of God. I have learned to abound and to be abased, Philippians 4:10. Such a hard lesson needs much learning. There is need of wisdom in several respects. Number one, to discern of God's end or purpose in it, to pick out the language and meaning of the dispensation. Micah 6, verse 9, hear the rod. Every providence has a voice, though sometimes it be so still and low that it requires some skill to hear it. Our spirits are most satisfied when we discern God's aim in everything. Number two, to know the nature of the affliction, whether it be to fan or to destroy, how it is intended for our good, and what uses and benefits we may make of it. Blessed is the man whom thou chastisest and teachest out of thy law. Psalm 94, verse 12. The rod is a blessing when instruction goes along with it. Number three, to find out our own duty, to know the things of obedience in the day of them. Oh, that thou wert wise in this thy day. Luke 19:41. There are seasonable and proper duties which become every providence. It is wisdom to find them out, to know what to do in every circumstance. Number four, to moderate the violences of our own passions. He that lives by sense, will, and passion is not wise. Skill is required of us to apply apt counsels and comforts that our hearts may be above the misery that our flesh is under. The Lord giveth counsel in the reins, and that calms the heart. Well then, number one, get wisdom, if you would get patience. Men of understanding have the greatest command of their affections. Our hastiness of spirit comes from folly, Proverbs 14:29. For where there is no wisdom, there is nothing to counterbalance affection. Look, as discretion sets limits to anger, so it does to sorrow. Solomon says, Proverbs 19:11, the discretion of a man deferreth his anger, so it does check the excesses of his grief. Number two, to confute the world's censure. They count patience, simplicity, and meekness under injuries to be but blockishness and folly. No, it is a calmness of mind upon holy and wise grounds. But it is no new thing with the world to call good evil, and to baptize graces with a name of their own fancying. As the astronomers call the glorious stars bulls, snakes, dragons, etc., so they miscall the most shining and glorious graces. Zeal is fury, strictness, nicety, and patience, folly. And yet James says, if any lack wisdom, meaning patience. Number three, would you be accounted wise? Show it by the patience and calmness of your spirits. We naturally desire to be thought sinful rather than weak. Are we so blind? John 9:40, verse 40. We all affect the repute of wisdom and would not be accounted blind or foolish. Consider, a man of boisterous affections is a fool, and he that has no command of his passions has no understanding. Observation 4. From that of God, in all your wants, we must immediately repair to God, or to no other place, or with nobody in between, only to God and directly to Him. The scriptures do not direct us to the shrines of saints, but to the throne of grace. You need not use the saints' intercession. Christ has opened a way for you into the presence of the Father. Observation 5. More particularly, observe wisdom must be sought of God. He is wise, the fountain of wisdom, an unexhausted fountain. His stock is not spent by misgiving. See Job 32, verse 8. There is a spirit in man, but the inspiration of the Almighty giveth understanding. Men have the faculty, but God gives the light, as the dial is capable of showing the time of the day when the sun shines on it. It is a most spiritual idolatry to lean to our own understanding. True wisdom is a divine ray and an emanation from God. Men never obtain it but in the way of a humble trust. When we see our insufficiency and God's all-sufficiency, then the Lord undertakes for us to direct us and guide us. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6, acknowledge the Lord in all thy ways, and he shall direct thy paths. When men are conceited and think to relieve their souls by their own thoughts and care, they do but perplex themselves the more. God will be acknowledged, that is, consulted with, in all our understandings and conflicts, or else we shall miscarry. The better sort of heathens would not begin anything of moment without asking counsel at the oracle. As all wisdom is to be sought of God, so especially this wisdom, to bear afflictions. There is nothing more abhorrent from reason than to think ourselves happy in misery. We must go to another school than that of nature. I confess, reason and nature may offer some rules that may carry a man far into the art of patience, but what is an inferior or grammar school to a university? The best way will be not to go to nature, but to Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Colossians 2, verse 3. Observation 6. From that, let him ask. God will have everything fetched out by prayer. He gives nothing without asking. It is one of the laws according to which heaven's bounty is dispensed. Ezekiel 36, verse 37, I will be sought to by the house of Israel for this thing. God will have us see the author of every mercy by the way of obtaining it. It is a comfort and a privilege to receive mercies in a way of duty. It is better to ask and not receive them than to receive and not ask. Prayer, coming between our desires and the bounty of God, is a means to beget a due respect between Him and us. Every audience increases love, thanks, and trust. Psalm 116, verse 1 and 2. We usually wear with thanks what we win by prayer, and those comforts are best improved which we receive upon our knees. Well, then, wisdom and every good gift is in alms. You have it for the asking. Mercies at that rate do not cost dear. Do not cost dear. Oh, who would not be one of that number whom God calls his supplicants, or suppliants, sorry. Zephaniah 3, verse 10, of the generation of them that seek him. Psalm 24, verse 6. Observation 7. Asking yields a remedy for the greatest wants or lacks. Men sit down groaning under their discouragements because they do not look further than themselves. Oh, you do not know how you may speed in asking. God humbles us with much weakness that he may put us upon prayer. That is easy to the spirit, which is hard to nature. God requires such obedience as is above the power of our natures, but not above the power of his own grace. It was a good saying that give what you command and command what you will. If God command anything above nature, it is to bring you upon your knees for grace. He loves to command that you may be forced to ask. And indeed, if God has commanded, you may be bold to ask. There is a promise goes hand in hand with every precept. Let him ask. All right, that's where we're going to stop for this time. Go in God's mercies, and Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.